The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Scott Pelley believes the truth is worth telling. But what is the truth? It's not so easy to assign these days. Pelley is a CBS News 60 Minutes correspondent and the former anchor of the CBS Evening News, so he knows something about the truth. He also is known for asking tough questions, and he's got a big one for America. What does all of this news, what are all these events, what do they say about us? His book is Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times. You can call in, ask Scott Pelley a question, give him a comment. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us with your questions. The number that email is thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource, 210-614-8980. Scott Pelley, welcome to The Source.
David, great to be with you.
So I'm getting you at the end of your press tour. So you've been around, you've covered the continental United States. So and what have you learned as you have been on this press tour?
What have I learned from the press tour? I've learned that you can visit a different city every day and do several events in every city all around the country. I have met a great number of people who are concerned about our country going forward. They're concerned that we now live in a time, David, as you alluded to earlier, where the truth can be made to seem a lie and a lie can be made to seem the truth. And in a lot of places, from coast to coast and all the way down the middle and throughout Texas, I have met people who are concerned about the future of our beloved country. You know, what I've been telling the audience is simply this: what is the fastest way to destroy a democracy? Is it terrorism? Is it war? Is it another Great Depression? I don't think so. I think the fastest way to destroy a democracy is to poison the information. The founders gave us the power, right? We the people, the power over the government. But the only way that we can exercise that power is with reliable, independent information.
How did you get started in news?
You know, I wanted to be a photographer when I was a boy. I was growing up in Lubbock. 13 years old, my uncle gave me a 35 millimeter camera, which was the most expensive and intricate thing I'd ever seen. And I just fell in love with it. So in hopes of getting a job with the photographers at the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, I tried to get a job at the paper as a copy boy. They hired people to work the 3 to midnight shift. And that was pretty good for high schoolers. It fit the schedule pretty well. I just had a temporal problem, David. They only hired kids who were 16 and above, and I was 15. So my career in search of the truth began with a lie. I told them that I was 16, and I got the job as a copy boy. And working in the wire room was just the most exciting thing I'd ever seen. You know, all the news of the world came into my wire room and was rewritten and edited and sent out to all of our readers of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal. It was just the most exciting thing I'd ever seen. Still wanted to be a photographer, but after about a year in the wire room, the executive editor of the paper, a guy named Dave Knapp with Marine Corps bearing, he always wore a white shirt, had a silver crew cut, barrel-chested guy, came into the wire room one day and said, "Do you want to be a reporter?" And I looked up from my homework and I said, "Well, I don't know. I never gave it any thought." He said, "Well, do you or don't you?" And I said, "Well, sure, I guess." And Knapp took me out of the wire room, sat me in front of a typewriter, which I had no idea how to operate. And I've been a reporter ever since. I was 16 years old.
A 16-year-old reporter covering events in Lubbock. Did you ever cover an avalanche?
No. Out there on the Llano Estacado, there is absolutely no danger of anything ever rolling downhill. And the odd name for the newspaper comes from this notion. It was supposed to be an avalanche of news on your doorstep every morning. So that's how a newspaper headquartered on a tabletop mesa became known as the Avalanche Journal.
But you've covered, I went back, I read some of your stories online, and you covered certain things, a little plane crash, dams that were questionable, hospitals that were failing inspections. You were Scott C. Pelley. Did the C make you seem older?
Yes, I thought so at the time. My middle name is Cameron, and I just thought, you know, I'm 16, I'm 17, I'm 18 years old at the newspaper. My byline's on the front page. Maybe if I use the middle initial, people will think I have a little bit more maturity than I actually do.
And but eventually, things went south at the paper. You were fired.
I was, and not for the last time, I will add. But I was working on obituaries, and they were pretty standard format. It's a pretty simple thing for a cub reporter to be doing. And I write about this in the book, Truth Worth Telling. One day, Dave Knapp called me into his office, and as gently as he could, he fired me. It turned out that one of the obits I had written was just shot through with mistakes. The spelling of the name, the age of the deceased, the members of the family, their names, etc. And the family had called and complained. And of course, accuracy is everything to us in journalism. And so that was that. I was amazed that I could have made so many mistakes. It just wasn't even, it wasn't part of my work even then. So I went back into a closet in the composing room where all the copy from previous days was stacked up. And I dug through the stacks and I found the obituary that I had written. The top part, the page had been cut into thirds. The top part was what I had written. The middle part was the bit with all the mistakes. And the bottom part was what I had written. And it had all been typed together for the typesetter. All taped together for the typesetter. And I didn't realize what I was seeing at the time. But it occurred to me years later that my obituary in both senses of the word, as far as the Avalanche Journal was concerned, had been sabotaged by somebody in the newsroom who wanted to get the kid reporter out of there. And I have no idea who it was. But it helped me kind of learn a little bit about what the wider world was like. And so that's how I came to leave the Avalanche Journal, which began my path to CBS, in a sense, because my next job was at the ABC station in Lubbock, which was Channel 28 at the time.
Yeah, so from the paper, you went and you banged on doors at the local TV stations looking for a job doing news there.
Nobody ever wanted to hire me, David. Not then or since. I've had to bang my way through every door that opened for me. And I just badgered the poor news directors at the three major affiliates in Lubbock over and over and over again. Finally, one of them decided that I would be less trouble inside than I was outside.
So you wore them down.
Jones.
So we're going to take a break. Yeah. We're going to talk more to Scott Pelley, 60 Minutes correspondent. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, as we talk about his book, Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Scott Pelley, 60 Minutes correspondent. His book is Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times. That story, the anecdote about you being fired from the paper because someone had messed around with your copy, I think that's important. It shows the what happens when, how important reliability is, and your reputation, your brand, and that was attacked directly in that incident, and you had to go.
Well, that's true, and so I had to remake myself, and I've remade myself in that way as not a newspaper reporter, but a television reporter. And when I went to work at the ABC station in Lubbock, it was a wonderful thing because we had such a small staff. I had to do everything. I went out and shot the stories on film in those days. I would come back and process the film. I would write the story while the film was running through the processor. I would take the processed film and cut it up with razor blades and tape it back together for putting it on the air. And then I would write the 10 o'clock news for the anchorman. So in those days, I got experience at every possible skill that a journalist would need in electronic media. And those are lessons that I use every day today when I was at the CBS Evening News and at 60 Minutes.
This question is a little bit off topic, but so were you in Lubbock in 1970 when the Big F5 hit downtown?
I was in Lubbock in 1970 when the big tornado hit town. I was just a boy, but I do remember the event. I remember driving downtown with my father after the tornado had hit and the big Great Plains Life Building Tower twisted on its foundation. So much destruction. Tornadoes were just such a feature of the spring and the summertime in Lubbock, Texas in those days. I can remember when I was a kid, sometimes I would climb up on the roof of our house and watch the tornadoes go by, not on the ground, but up in the air, watch these slender daggers flying past the house. It probably wasn't a very smart thing to do, but the weather was so dramatic. My father loved a thunderstorm. And if there was a big storm, he would walk out on the porch, even take a seat out on the porch and just take in the show. And I've always had enormous respect for weather, which has really informed my career because of all the hurricanes that I've been covering at CBS for these years.
Yeah, that 1970 F5 was so big they had to recategorize tornadoes after that. In 1977, there was the farmers' strike in Lubbock. I guess you were working for the TV then, right?
I was at that point, and I remember they came into town. They were looking for pay parity, crop price parity for their agricultural products, cotton primarily. And they drove their John Deeres into town and surrounded the newspaper, the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, with their John Deeres to try to keep the newspapers from getting out on the street because they were so upset with the way the paper had been covering their movement.
Yeah, that's why I bring that up, because here we are still. There's tension typically when you're covering events and some people don't like what you're reporting.
Well, that's right. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's both halves of free speech. And I completely support people who want to criticize the media, who want to protest what we write. Sometimes they're right about what we write. I often find that the bias is not so much in the reporting, but it's in the viewing. I write about that in Truth Worth Telling. I would cover events like do an interview with presidents or covering the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we would put our stories on 60 Minutes, and I would get mail from liberals and conservatives complaining about the piece. And when you start getting mail and it's 50-50 complaints from conservatives and liberals both, you start to figure that you got it pretty close to right.
Well, there is a complaint about journalism having a bias towards fairness, which is an expression that on its face sounds ridiculous. But you know, when you look a little deeper, it means something. I mean, can you respond to that?
Well, again, you know, the bias, I believe, is very often in the viewer and in the reader rather than in what is being reported. People see what they want to see, and if it violates what they already believe, then they tend to criticize the reporter and not really think introspectively about what's going on in their own heads. here is something, David, that you've hit on that worries me the most about our beloved country. We are now living in this internet age in which you can choose your tailor-made media that confirms that what you already believe is correct on the left and the right. And I fear that many of our citizens are walling themselves off into these digital citadels of confirming information where they don't ever have to listen to the other side. And no democracy can survive that way. In fact, this is exactly why democracies were invented, because we're a diverse people from different backgrounds with different goals in our lives, but we all want to be part of this great country, and we all want to see it move not left, not right, but forward. The only way to do that is to have a national conversation and to compromise on areas where we think we can move the country forward. This is why Washington is completely dysfunctional now. The liberals and the conservatives have stopped talking to each other, and there is no way to move the country forward that way. No democracy can survive that way. I write about this quite a bit in the book, and I'm hoping to capture the attention of the American people and coax them out of those digital citadels of confirming information so that we can all be together again in the middle, having a healthy debate, respecting one another, listening to one another, and moving the country forward.
The number is 210-614-8980, and our guest is Scott Pelley, CBS News, CBS 60 Minutes correspondent. Now, the founding fathers, they believed in freedom of the press, but they knew firsthand how messy freedom of the press can be. They would frequently write letters into newspapers making up lies and telling stories about their political opponents. Truth was pretty messy in the gestation of American democracy.
Well, without a doubt, David, fake news is not a new concept. It existed at our founding. It's existed throughout our history.
Sure. That's why Alexander Hamilton founded the New York Post to attack Jefferson.
Exactly right. And one of the things that happened with the maturing of our country was the maturing of journalism, the professionalization of journalism. And so we moved from that era of partisan reporting and bias and lies into an era of professional journalism that tried to get it right, tried to operate down the middle and bring in voices from both sides. So that is one of the reasons that America is great. We have today the greatest journalism on earth, bar none. One of the reasons we have the greatest journalism on earth is because we have the greatest journalism schools in the world. People come from all over the world to America to go to journalism school because America is the world standard for journalism. I think many people take this for granted now. And when the president is saying things like CBS News is the enemy of the American people, too many people are agreeing with that idea when there is simply no democracy without journalism, because we have to have that independent, reliable information to make decisions for our families and for our country.
So who delivers the news is important, that branding. If you have something like NPR or CBS News next to you, then people should have a level of trust when it comes to that. But we have memes and other ways that people are getting news that they don't have that branding, and yet they seem to finding a lot of currency in information flow.
Well, this is the thing that I find so dangerous when I think about, when I think about the information in our country being poisoned. you know, we live in this age where never before has more information been available to more people, and that's a great thing. But we also have to recognize that it is the age where never before in human history has more bad information been available to more people. This is one of the things I write about in the book. One of the people in the book is a guy who created a fake news site online.
And it's a Jester Kohler?
And yes.
Justin Kohler.
And just made things up. One of his stories was a story about a little town in Texas that the U.S. Army had cordoned off because there was an Ebola outbreak. Well, it was completely false. There was no army cordon. There was no little town in Texas. There was no Ebola outbreak. But that story got a million views. Now, why would he do that? Well, for him, it's an advertising model. He made a couple of pennies or maybe a nickel every time somebody clicked on that. So what I'm advising people to do in this tour all across the country and in the book Truth Worth Telling is that they have to recognize now that they have a responsibility that they never had before. They have a responsibility to choose information that they believe is correct. And the way to do that, and the beauty part is it's never been easier, if you read something on the internet you're not sure about or something that's designed to create outrage or fear, like the story about Ebola, then look and see, well, what is TPR reporting on this? What is the Chicago Tribune? What is the New York Times? What is the Washington Post, the Atlanta Constitution, CBS News? What are they reporting on this? You have to triangulate your information now. And here's what you know about those brand names like TPR. We have reputational risk. If we get something wrong, people are going to be fired. People will stop watching our broadcast, listening to our radio broadcasts and that sort of thing. And so we have an enormous stake in getting it right. So that's why you want to turn to brand name journalism to at least verify the kind of information you're getting.
We have institutional accountability. Whereas if I do something really squirrely, I'm going to really hear about it and I could be fired.
Absolutely. I mean, the people working at TPR, CBS News, what have you, have very likely been to journalism school, probably have advanced degrees. They're being supervised by journalists who've been in the job for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And again, they have reputational risk. If I get something wrong on 60 Minutes, it's going to be a firestorm. And so my team and I are always working all day and all night, checking the facts, making sure that we're not biased in our reporting. And that's what people can expect from what I earlier described as the best journalism in the world.
Stephen Colbert one time asked you if he could use the CBS news desk to do a comedic bit. What'd you tell him?
I had to tell Stephen no. This was back when he was doing the Colbert Report. And he wanted to do a pratfall or something like that on the set of the CBS Evening News. And, you know, that sounds harmless enough. But I told him that we couldn't do that because the set of the CBS Evening News is a symbol. It's a symbol of accurate reporting. It's a symbol of reality, not comedy, not satire, not make-believe. And I figured that Stephen thought I was being pretty pompous and old-fashioned about that until he told an audience months later, quote, "Thank God something is sacred."
Scott Pelley is the correspondent for 60 Minutes on CBS. He's a former news anchor for the CBS Evening News. We've got another half hour. If you've got a question or a comment, call in 210-614-8980. I've got some questions lined up for you. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Scott Pelley is the 60 Minutes correspondent. His book is Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meanings in the Stories of Our Times. And the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Edwin is on the line. And Edwin, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. It seems to me that much of news is put out as infotainment. It makes it hard to trust news when it's couched in the form of entertainment. Can you speak to that a little?
All right, Edwin, thank you for the call. Scott Pelley.
Edwin, I couldn't agree more. I think that much of television news has slipped too far into the entertainment realm. I think it undermines our credibility. I think it undermines the credibility of reporters. One of the things that I've been counseling my colleagues against is appearing in movies and things like that, which has become far too prevalent. And it's been argued to me that a viewer like you, Edwin, would never make the mistake of confusing the reporter who's reporting in a movie about a space alien invasion and then seeing that same reporter reporting the election results the next night. You'd never confuse those two. And of course you wouldn't, but you would wonder, why is that reporter in this job? Is it for celebrity or is it for credibility? And when people have to ask that question, that's where people like the president find a wedge where they can start criticizing the media as the enemy of the American people. I think that a great deal of this is self-inflicted by the media, and we would do ourselves and our country an enormous service if we would remember that journalism is about public service and that journalism has nothing whatever to do with being popular.
Reading your book, you tell some incredible stories. I was thinking about Ernie Pyle as I read your book, a World War II correspondent famous for telling the stories of American GIs and really telling their stories in a very humane, visceral way. Do you think that that's something that's been lost in our journalism these days?
Well, to be mentioned in the same sentence with Ernie Pyle, David, I'm overwhelmed with humility by that because I'm an enormous Ernie Pyle fan. I've been through his stories and have done quite a bit of research on the way he told those stories. He would focus on a single soldier, and you would learn everything that you needed to know about that battle from the story of just one individual who had either survived or had not survived that battle. So I think we have drifted away from that kind of storytelling. There's a great deal of it today that's still being done, that's done incredibly well. But I think we could move more in that direction. I always tell young people and journalism students that these stories that we tell need to be about humanity, about individuals, that they need to have empathy for the people they're writing about so they can wear that person's clothes and understand them better. You know, Steven Spielberg didn't do a movie called D-Day. He did a movie called Saving Private Ryan. And that's the point. You learned everything you needed to know about D-Day through the story of this one individual. People often ask me, how is it that 60 Minutes is still on the air going into its 52nd season next year? This is how. Telling stories that people can relate to, but stories that illuminate the issues of our day.
Let's go to the callers. Number is 210-614-8980 with Kyle. And Kyle, you're on the air with Scott Pelley.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, what do you think are the biggest threats to journalism today?
Kyle, thank you for that. One of them is what we were just talking about, and that is journalists confusing celebrity with credibility. Journalists, not all of them, just a few of them really, who think that journalism has something to do with being popular. If you're doing journalism correctly, it is much more likely that you're going to be unpopular, and that's the way this business is supposed to work. I've had so many people come up to me recently and say, oh, this must be a terrible time to be a reporter. And I've told them, no, this is the greatest time to be a reporter because attention is being focused on the journalism community in the United States. And this is an amazing opportunity to show them what we do, how we do it, and tell them what our values are. So in terms of threats to journalism, I think what we're hearing from the far right, what we're hearing from the president, is eventually going to backfire. I think Americans understand that they need to have independent, generally reliable information in order to make decisions about their lives and the life of the country. You know, Madison wrote that freedom of speech and freedom of the press are the rights that guarantee all the others. He knew if we could say what we wanted to say, write what we wanted to write, read what we wanted to read, then all of the other rights that he put in the Bill of Rights would be protected. I think that's beginning to dawn on people across the country, just how essential journalism is and how the quality of our democracy depends on the quality of our journalism.
An email from Daniel. How do you square the idea of institutional responsibility with things like Fox News and Sinclair News?
Well, there are media on the far left and on the far right that have taken what is, in my view, a cynical business model. They have realized that there are profits to be had by carving out the far left and the far right and providing that kind of confirming information that I described earlier, which gives somebody a very warm feeling being told that everything they already think is correct. But again, as we discussed, that's no way to run a democracy. So I tell audiences that there are those who are operating with these cynical business models. Then there are those who are operating to undermine our country. I mean, we've seen this with Russia, with China, with North Korea. They have figured out that the fastest way to destroy a democracy is by poisoning the information. And what's interesting is this isn't such a problem for them because they control their media. But for democracies around the world, this could be an existential threat.
You say on the right and the left, so let me just, are you saying that Fox News and MSNBC are the exact same thing?
Essentially, I mean, anyone who is, and there's websites, all kinds of websites in addition, anyone who is peddling, confirming information, who has run off the road, you know, truckers in West Texas used to say, keep her between the ditches. In other words, keep the truck on the road. Well, we don't want to run off into the ditch on the left or on the right. We want to keep the truck of America on the road. And mainstream media has become a pejorative recently, and I don't understand why that is. I want to be in the mainstream. I want to be in the middle of the mainstream. I don't want to be off on some tributary on the left and the right. So that's where American journalism needs to find itself. There are always going to be commentators on the far left and the far right that people want to listen to. But in terms of the kind of reliable information that we need to have to make decisions about whether the country goes to war, to make decisions about foreign policy, to make decisions about healthcare, immigration, for example, we need to listen to all views and compromise our way forward. Compromise has also become a pejorative, and it's not. It's the only way any democracy moves forward.
Truckers also say the only thing you'll find in the middle of the road is yellow stripes and dead armadillos.
And I've seen a few of those.
So, I mean, there's some comes a time when you gotta call it like it is. And you've done that.
Well, that's absolutely right, David. In the first year of the Trump administration, I was anchoring CBS Evening News, and we were very frank on the evening news about when the president was telling the truth, when he was not, and how it was we knew the difference. And it was shortly after that that the president called CBS News the enemy of the American people. I went to lunch at the White House with the president a few weeks after that. I'd been invited with about another half dozen or so anchors to have lunch with the president. And I said, you know, Mr. President, criticize the media. Absolutely. Take your best shot. We do a lot of things that need to be criticized. But this rhetoric, this enemy of the American people, I'm concerned that some poor deranged individual is going to walk into the local newspaper or the local TV station and shoot the receptionist because she's the enemy of the American people. And the president looked up at the ceiling and he looked back down at me. And this is a direct quote. He said, I don't worry about that. Well, then fast forward several more months, maybe a year or so, we had the guy who was mailing bombs to the people that he considered to be enemies of the president. And I got a call from the FBI telling me that the guy had a file on me and my family in his computer, and he had my home address.
Chilling. That's just chilling. Scott Pelley, we're going to be right back. We're going to take a break. Scott Pelley is the correspondent for 60 Minutes. His book is Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times. Our number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Scott Pelley, CBS newsman. And let's get Henry on the air. He's called in. And Henry, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air with Scott Pelley.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a quick question for Scott. And my question is, how has social media played a negative role to journalism, opposed to, you know, before social media was even available?
Henry, thank you for the call. Scott Pelley.
Well, you know, I think, Henry, that it cuts both ways. And in one regard, really excellent, serious journalists have access to social media, and it gives us more ways to report. And that is a great thing. On the other hand, rumor can spread awfully fast. As you know, the old saying, a lie will go around the world before the truth can get its boots on. And I'm afraid that has never been more true than it has been recently. And so I do worry a great deal about people just believing whatever they see on social media. And this gets back to that point that I had, that the viewer, the citizen of this country, has a responsibility that they've never had before. And that is that they have to triangulate the information that's important to them against reliable sources, against brand name media, to see what serious professional journalists are reporting.
A lot of people think algorithms are something is a former vice president doing a clumsy Macarena, but an algorithm is actually a complicated formula that is used to drive news to certain people and online and Facebook, and it can really change people's minds about things.
You know, I write about this in the book, David. It's called artificial intelligence. I think it's artificial stupidity. You know, Mark Zuckerberg said about the 2016 election and his company, Facebook, he said, trying to figure out what's true is really hard. Well, yeah, it is hard. But it's so hard that there are people who go to universities and earn degrees in figuring out what the truth is. And those are called journalism degrees. And those people are called journalists. And I think if Mark Zuckerberg, with his multi-billions of dollars, would hire for himself a few hundred journalists and put them in the loop, he wouldn't be so susceptible to this artificial stupidity. He'd have real people in there vetting stories, looking at things and saying, wow, could that have really happened? I think I'm going to check.
So do you think right now we are in a constitutional crisis? The checks and balances that the founders engineered for our government are just not working?
You know, I think it's exactly the opposite. I think that what we are seeing is our Constitution working extremely well and just the way the founders had in mind with the separation of powers. We complain a great deal right now about gridlock in Washington, but this is what the founders had in mind. The Constitution is a circuit breaker that prevents real damage. And so when politics becomes outrageous, self-serving, hyper-partisan, then the whole system slows down. And that's what we're seeing right now. The system is working brilliantly, and it is protecting itself. Not much is happening with the administration or on Capitol Hill or even the judiciary. Yes, President Trump has made a couple of appointments to the Supreme Court that will have a lasting effect. However, in other aspects of the government, not much is happening because the system is designed to be hobbled by the checks and balances that the founders put into the Constitution. So I think what we're seeing is the Constitution working brilliantly well.
And what about the role of journalism and checks and balances, the fourth branch of the government?
Well, you know, it's like I said earlier, what Madison wrote in 1800 in criticizing the Alien and Sedition Act. He wrote that freedom of speech and freedom of the press are the rights that guarantee all the others. And so what you're seeing here is robust media. When the president says something, we fact check it and we tell you whether it's true or not. And that's exactly what the founders had in mind.
Well, we can do that all day long. You have to have this delivery mechanism to get it into the hands of the people, and then there's supposed to be some form of outrage or accountability with the people to hold the ne'er-do-wells in check, hold them accountable.
Well, yeah, where's the outrage? I hear that everywhere I go. And, you know, all we can do, David, in what we do in journalism is do that reporting every day, day after day after day, and let the American people decide how they want to handle it. There is nothing that we know about Donald Trump today that we did not know before Election Day. And it was all reported. It was all put out there. And the American people made the decision that they made. What we can do is continue to provide in the most credible way, independent, generally reliable information. And it's up to the wisdom of the American people at large to decide what they want to do with that. But they can't exercise that power unless they have independent information.
So is the dilemma for the journalist, and you're watching these things unfold, and you're reporting on it, you're documenting it, you're telling the story, but as soon as you step outside of that role and you become something a little bit more and you exert yourself as like trying to tell people, hey, you know, hey, folks, this is going on. This is really important. You got to, you know, everyone, let's stand up, rise up, deal with this. You can never go back to the other role. And essentially you're done as a journalist.
Well, I that would be up to the individual credibility of the person who's doing that. But I wouldn't do that. I believe in playing it straight, not having any kind of agenda, just relaying the facts and letting the people decide. I believe in that kind of journalism. You know, I tell young people that we've had this revolution in media, but it's a revolution in distribution. It's a revolution in the way we receive the information. There is no revolution in content. On every story, we ask ourselves, is it right? Is it fair? Is it honest? And it doesn't matter if you're working on a stone tablet or a glass tablet, the rules of content never, ever change. The viewer and the reader has the right to reliable, accurate, balanced information. And so those rules can seem sort of old-fashioned in this revolutionary time of media, but it's important to understand that distribution is changing in ways that we can only imagine, but the rules of content do not.
Sarah on Twitter asked, how should journalists regain the trust of the public?
Do our jobs well. That's what I tell everybody. People, young journalists in particular, come to me and say, gosh, what should we do? And the answer is do your job. Do it well. Do it every day. Engage with the public. Let people know what it is we do, how we do it, and what our principles are. We're receiving a great deal of criticism on the other side here. And part of what you do is appear on The Source with you and evangelize for democracy and great journalism. And that's part of what we do in the book Truth Worth Telling, is to remind the American people how vital independent information is for them to make decisions in their lives and the life of the country.
Don't have to look very far back to see some things that people call failures of journalism, going into the Iraq war under false pretenses, the mortgage meltdown, the economy almost collapsed over that. Some people even saying giving Trump too much airtime during the election, the inability to cover climate change. I mean, is there a problem here?
Well, I mean, we're a human organization in journalism. And so we're going to make mistakes. There are going to be errors. There are going to be things we should have covered but didn't, things that we did cover and shouldn't have, perhaps. But, you know, I think we just have to go at it every day and do our very best every day. We have the best journalism in the world. It is one of the things that has made this country great. One of the things that made the American century was the quality of our journalism, and we're going to have to maintain that quality if we're going to have another American century.
What do you want people to get out of reading your book?
That values matter, principles matter. The book is a memoir, but it's not about me. It's about these extraordinary people that I've met in my life who discovered the meaning of their lives and the historic events of our times. The first chapter, David, as you know, is entitled Gallantry. And it's about what I saw at the World Trade Center on 9/11 with the members of the fire department of the city of New York. And so the book is filled with stories like that about people who showed the greatest American values during some of the most difficult times we've faced.
And these stories, they can point to where America goes now, where we're headed?
You know, we're having this conversation, aren't we, as a country, about who we are today and who we want to be. And I think this book is the right thing at the right moment, because so many people across the country seem a little unbalanced, if you will, a little concerned about what's going on politically and wondering about things that are true and things that are false, and feel like they could use some guidance. And I hope that this book and the stories of these remarkable people remind the American people that values matter.
Scott Pelley, 60 Minutes correspondent. His book is Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.